This is Sylvester McCoy. You're listening to Who Made Who, and Me Made Me, and my mother and father did the same.
You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Welcome to Who Made Who, Cinema Geekly's Doctor Who podcast. It's Anthony Lewis and Ben Knight. We're finally back, Ben, to talk about Doctor Who Series 14.
We are. Do you hear some squeaky wheels? What's that noise? Hang on a second. Oh, hello. Can I help you?
Hello.
How are we this many episodes
Whoa!
In and still no Daleks?
I did not. Ben, there's a Dalek at your door.
Yeah, how are we this far episodes in and no Daleks? Because you're not going to be in this season, so...
What?
Suck it up, princess. Yeah,
hey, look.
Big old pepper pot.
Hey, but on the other hand, my toilet's backed up. You got that plunger. I feel like we could put this to good use. So if you're looking for like a second job, like a side hustle or whatever, we got you covered. Oh, he's rolling away.
Aren't too proud. Which toilet is it?
Okay, well that's that bit done. Marvelous. It says in the script, pause for audience to stop laughing and move on to next bit. Okay, we'll do that.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah.
We haven't talked to each other, Ben, since slightly after Christmas. If this is the only podcast you listen to on Cinema Geekly, we haven't spoken to each other since Christmas of 2023, and here we are now in May of 2024 to talk about the first two episodes of Series 14. Or if you're watching on Disney Plus, episodes 2 and 3.
So weird.
I don't get what's going on there.
They're fucking with us numerically.
The new episode is also out, but I haven't watched it yet. So we'll see what happens there. That one is written by Stephen Double Moffat. So,
and before we even move on, all I'll say is, patience, people who've only watched episodes 1 and 2. Moffat represents in episode 3.
Really?
Not something I thought I'd find myself saying, but I've dragged my Double Moffat t-shirt merchandise from this very show out of retirement in honor of it.
Wow. Okay, well, we'll talk about that the next time we're around, when we talk about episodes 3 and 4. But first, we're going to talk about episodes 1 and 2, and they were written by Russell V. Davies. Or Davis. Is it Davis or Davies?
Why is he V, not T?
The. I said the. That's what the T stands for. Russell V. Davis. Or Davies. I don't know how...
The, as in the... Right, okay, got you. No, that really confused me. Right, okay.
The one and only.
Russell T. Davis.
It's Davis. Yeah. Okay, because it's spelled... In America, we might call that a Davies.
We might do in parts of the UK as well, but it's the Welsh iteration of Davies, and it is traditionally pronounced Davis.
Well, let's talk about Series 14, Episode 1, Space Babies.
They are floating in space. Space Babies. Yeah, nice.
Intercutting scenes from Star Wars. Oh, we're not intercutting scenes from Star Wars. I mean, they are on Disney Plus now. They could do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Doctor...
But not Star Trek, despite the reference to that. Anyway,
The Doctor takes Ruby Sunday, to a space station in the future orbiting another planet. After discovering a monster in the station's lower decks... Oh, that's a Star Trek reference. The pair discover...
We really must visit those guys.
Really, truly. The pair discover a crew of talking babies operating the ship in the upper levels. After mistaking the Doctor and Ruby as their parents, the crew explains that they have been alone for 6 years. They do not look like six-year-olds. Under the care of a Nan-E, who is discovered to be Jocelyn, the last member of the station's original crew, who stayed when the crew were ordered to abandon the station. And apparently...
Are you my nanny?
They're apparently abandoned the station and also the babies, I guess. The doctor and Ruby investigate the creature nicknamed the Bogeyman, or if you're from the United States, the Boogeyman.
Yeah, but the joke doesn't work if you're from the United States. Like, that crossed my mind.
No. Well, kind of. Kind of.
I suppose, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as well.
We call them boogers. And learned that it was genetically grown from leftover baby mucus. Just as the babies were grown by the ship, Jocelyn tries to eject the creature from the airlock, but Ruby and the doctor stop her. Afterwards, the doctor repairs the station and allows Jocelyn, the babies, and the bogeyman to make their way towards their new home. He invites Ruby to officially accompany him, but warns that he can never take her back to the day of her birth, because mysterious mysteries. Instead, Ruby asks to go back to see Carla and Cherry as the doctor starts to scan Ruby's DNA. Ben, what did you think of episode one?
Very Russell T. Davis, wasn't it?
This was very farting aliens at the beginning of the series one of this iteration of Doctor Who, 100%.
Yeah, it was peak RTD. We're already seeing that kind of reintroduction of his sort of preferred aesthetic, the color schemes and everything else is in there. The sort of juxtaposing of sort of childish, absurd stuff alongside science fiction and futury stuff. I mean, this is probably the most literal version of that they've ever made. Mm-hmm. The concept of the episode, I didn't hate, although like there were some logic problems with it, but what are you gonna do? The performances from the adult cast in this I thought were really very good. I think the casting decision to use these babies all using voice-overed and face transplanted older kids, which if you watch the making of show that accompanies Doctor Who, it really is quite clever how they've done some of that. It's not quite as sort of daft as it looks. Although one of the babies, I didn't learn their names, I'm afraid. But one of the babies, as much as they were sort of, you know, making his mouth move correctly and what have you, because it was, you know, a bit of CGI and sort of transplanting the face, I just love the fact that his eyes were always saying something completely different, really, from 100%. What he was saying. Like his, you know, whatever he was saying, he was giving side eye of a kind of, are you on glue? What's going on here? Type facial expression whilst just talking normally, which I thought was funny.
I want my but mom. Where's my snack?
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired. Like, I want to go home.
But he was a recast decision because originally, I don't know what it is with me with names today. We'll come back to me in a minute. But the original actor was somebody who they're
Clint Howard.
Not having.
Clint Howard?
No.
That's Ron Howard's brother who famously played a baby in the original Star Trek show.
Oh, I see.
And he kind of has always had that face, no matter what, even though he's like in his late 60s or early 70s.
Ah, right. Well,
anyway, that's a terrible joke. Moving on.
It's because you've been doing all these dad jokes off air, that's why. But no, anyway, I can't now remember who the actor is I'm thinking of. But anyway, he's now going to be back in a later episode as a bigger role because his screen tests were like, we feel like we're wasting you putting you in this role.
Yeah.
So that was fun. So yeah, the making of this is great. It looks good. It has the aesthetic I've missed in the sort of darker eras of modern Who. I don't mind the like absurd story stuff. I thought the effects, it was very good, but the talking baby thing, I think it could have been handled better because these kids, you know, ultimately, as you say, you know, they were always clearly looking for where their mum was and what have you, but like to make it appear as it did was quite an achievement. The story itself, the concept of the story is another classic RTD type sort of creation. There was a lot right with it, and yet there was quite a lot that wasn't enjoyable about it, and I don't really know why that was. I mean, it wasn't the performances, I don't think. I think part of it might actually be something as simple as I really don't like babies.
Oh, and so, wow.
Yeah, I genuinely, shots I think that fired. Actually might... Yeah, I think that actually might be the problem, is I've found them kind of annoying because I always find babies annoying.
Oh, man. As a parent, Ben, babies are by far the part I miss most about having kids. No offense to my children.
I've heard it's sad. Yeah.
But, well, man, babies were easily the best part. And that includes diaper changing and vomiting.
I was going to say, baby, toddler, basically fine, then massive gap until they become adults, and then, well, that's either going to go one way or the other. Yeah. They're either going to be great and your best friends, or they're going to be an absolute horror show. Mm. But who knows? But yeah, so the performances were pretty solid. I think the only weak acting performance was, forgive me, I've forgotten her name, the woman who played Jocelyn, I thought wasn't great. Yeah. There was some ropey I was going to say old Who style acting went on from her, but which is not a compliment. The bogeyman kind of idea, which apparently Russell's been kicking around in his mind for a very long time, just sort of popped into his brain. I think those who remember the children's book series and I think cartoon series afterwards, Fungus the Bogeyman, might be kind of like, sounds familiar, but all right. But that monster was super scary. I've also seen it, as in the costume of it and how it, you know, what in the making of it, and like it's really good. And it's pulled off excellently. I mean, some of the monster work in Who over the years, I mean, famously in old Who, some of it is extraordinarily ropey. But even in sort of modern Who, like there's been some that have stood out as not being great, but this was a really great construction. I did partly wonder actually whether it might have been a little bit scary for kids, because you know, as much
for little ones, yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, and again, you know, yes, was it a groundbreaking sort of conceptual idea? No, not really. Did it have a sort of vague aesthetic of Alien? Yeah, a little bit. So it wasn't breathtakingly novel, but it was surprisingly effective and a sort of good iteration, and again that juxtaposition of the horror character, I suppose, versus, you know, this kind of space nursery was clever. It was nicely done. I thought, and I'll say this in fact for all of these episodes, Shooty and God, what is it with me and names at the moment? I'll go with it the other way. The Doctor and Ruby, both superb performances. I think that's basically true throughout these episodes. And Shooty, by the time you hit the last of the episodes we're going to talk about in this show, talk about having grown into the character. By the time you hit episode 3, rather, like that is a strong, strong Doctor we've got now, which is what we need.
Something for me to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I wasn't in love with this first outing, but I also realized it was like it had to be jarring because we are pulling back into Russell's version of Who, and so that was always going to smart a bit.
Yeah. It's so weird to put it in those terms. Because it's like, you know, because the Russell's turn with the show, which lasted from the beginning of its reintroduction to the end of David Tennant's run, is considered by many Whovians to be the best that it's ever been. I mean, obviously there's a toss up between that and like Matt Smith's first few seasons or whatever. Mm-hmm. People obviously really love that as well. But it's so weird to look at it and be like, well, it's Russell, so it's going to be really jarring at first. I mean, and to be fair, that is very true, because my Doctor Who journey started with me trying desperately to get into the show, because everybody was talking about, like, you specifically, you and Aaron at the time were talking about, just like, you're gonna love this, like I really think you're gonna really enjoy this, like you just gotta stick it through that first bit of that season. And it really took into the end of the first season for me to get hooked, but I had to get that far, and it took many tries. And then in retrospect, I liked those episodes that I thought I didn't like. I kind of liked them more than I realized, sort of with the hindsight when they of make, looking back.
And they make more sense with hindsight for somebody who's just sort of coming to it at that point. I think we're going to see that again now as well. I mean, one thing I didn't massively love about this episode was, you know, because of the Disney reboot, effectively, we had to sit through a scene where the basics of Doctor Who are explained to the audience via that conversation between the Doctor and Ruby. But, you know, I mean, like I say, this episode was a necessity because it introduces there's something odd about Ruby because you get that the DNA
what's going on
scan
there.
Thing.
He thinks something's up. Yeah.
He definitely does. You get a lot of the kind of the stuff from the modern reboot, sort of stuff where, you know, we're linking her back to her family in most episodes, or at least as a sort of strong tie back to it.
I feel like you're they're getting, giving away some of that mystery.
Yeah.
In this, by the end of the second episode, I have a feeling they're giving away some of that mystery if you think about it for a little bit, but
no, I agree. I think that's true. But I also think that the like Russell's, you know, Russell isn't Moffat, and he's certainly not Chibnall. He was far less about kind of overcomplicated fucking with the audience, and it was more, you know, it was more storytelling. Yes, there were sort of secrets and mysteries and twists. More on that in a minute. But it didn't always need to be unnecessarily complicated. Yeah. You know, there weren't double Moffats in the RTD era, or the insanely confusing, sorry, what happened? I don't know, but they solved it in 30 seconds of dialogue at the end of the Chibnall era. You know, and also this is the first time for a little while that we've got somebody from the start writing for the Doctor they've got from the start.
Yes.
And like, don't underestimate the importance of that, because that
very
is
very important.
It's what did for the early stages of both Jodie Whittaker and Peter Capaldi, in my view. So yeah, it was the first episode of Space Babies. Once you get over the conceit of the Space Babies thing, and if you find babies annoying, I thought it was a good bit of classic RTD, not too complicated. Don't think about it too hard, because actually the bits fall apart a little bit if you think about this episode too hard. You know, it was what it was. It was an introduction. It's a way of bridging audiences and all of those things. We also get to see, and I think I was worried that we weren't going to see it because it's so crucial to the Doctor and also to the way that Russell writes the Doctor Who, that you have to have that scene where the creature there was trying to was about to get blown out of the airlock by the kid, and they stop it. Jocelyn, rather, and they stop her. That you need to remember, or you need to learn if you're coming to this afresh, that the bad guy in Doctor Who isn't always like a simple bad guy. And there's often, you know, a sort of encouragement in the direction of empathy. And I think that's something actually we're going to see quite a lot of from Russell's writing, and maybe some of the guest writers, including Moffat, actually. Russell and Stephen both had a touch of satire to their, or at the very least allegory, to the way that they wrote Who. And we've been missing that for a long time now. So there is going to be, you know, politics in Who. And for those people who get, you know, annoyed by that or think that that's a new thing, it's always been a component of science fiction. It has long been a component of Doctor Who. It's not new at all. It's just that maybe you've become a bit sensitive, love. I'm not calling you a snowflake.
What would you give episode one?
I've warmed to it since when I first watched it. I must admit, the baby thing was so grating for me, but I've gone with a 3.5.
Ooh. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel bad that I didn't talk about how I felt about this episode first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I gave this a 2.5.
Oh, okay.
I did not like this episode.
You see, I didn't initially, but I have...
Number one.
I have warmed to it. Like, looking back on it, I've kind of chilled out a bit about it.
Number one, I am a fan of calling anything that you see, like, that would be on Earth but in space, like that, but with space in front of it. So just being like space babies.
Space, they're just babies.
Space babies is awesome. Great title.
Yeah.
I did, like, as soon as I saw the talking babies and in the, the motorized strollers, kind of like little tiny baby Daleks sort of moving around. I was like, kind of cute, but also like, oh, Russell, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, didn't you get this out of your system with like the farting guys like way back then? Like, can we like, do we got to do this? Do we got to do this thing with like the booger monster again? But
especially after the singing bloody gremlins or whatever.
Yeah. Know? What really hurt for me, actually, I thought the babies didn't look that good, but I think a lot of it is they sort of gave it the talking pets technique where they sort of animated the mouth. And as you noted, a lot of the eyes weren't there. But a lot of the time it was emotive dialogue. Like the dialogue was emotive, but the babies had zero emotion on their face. Like they sounded sad or happy, but the babies were just blank. They were just babies.
And so much work went into it. I mean, I watched the making of thing for it, and it's cleverer than it looks. But even with that,
I mean, they would have had to have done, they would have had to have done their entire faces, and I think that would have looked worse. Well,
they did do quite a lot of mapping. It isn't just the mouth, actually. Yeah. But yeah, the problem is, it's the reason why AI generated videos and stuff never works, because you can't get the eyes right. You know?
Yeah, and you get that uncanny valley anyway. Like, you know, babies can't really emote like that anyway. It would have looked weird regardless. Mm-hmm. So that kind of didn't really work for me. The bogeyman creature design I thought was excellent.
Yeah,
I thought that was very good.
The movement
was
superb. I mean, I know they take the kind of the movement and choreography aspects of these creatures in Who very seriously.
I mean, a lot of some of it was sort of giving like Alien vibes.
Definitely,
I was definitely getting that sort of feel 100%. You know, the idea that it's made out of like baby snot is like, okay, Russell. What are we? Russell!
I didn't hate it, but I think that's it. I think I hated it at the time. And then I've now kind of gone back and thought about it. And I think also watching the making of it has improved my disposition towards it slightly as well.
Yeah. I think for me, it was just because like that early Russell stuff, like that was the stuff that I had to really overcome to sort of become a Doctor Who fan. And now I'm sort of getting the vibe that, like, this is the kind of stuff he wants to make. And that other stuff that he made, it was really good. But he was like, I wish I could make stuff about, like, farts and burps and boogers. Mm.
And he's better. And he is better than that. I mean, when you see stuff that he writes outside of Who, he's better than that. But again, he is also the one writer on Who is determined that it will not lose the link to its young audience.
Yes, and because, I totally get it. Yep.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for me, you know, that's all.
No, I can entirely understand why. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next episode, episode 2, is called The Devil's Cord. Similar to The Devil's Lettuce, which is what I call weed, Ben. In 1925, a music teacher shows his student The Devil's Cord, which is just a tritone. But, you know, anyway, if you play it, apparently it summons a being called the Maestro, who kills the teacher by consuming the music from his heart. Meanwhile, at Ruby's request, the Doctor takes her to 1963 to see the Beatles record their first album in some city that we shall not mention for continuity purposes with another podcast at EMI Recording Studios. They discover from John Lennon and Paul McCartney that the world has lost its taste for music, which the Doctor fears will alter humanity's future. He has Ruby play a song, gaining the attention of the Maestro, who is consuming music from every human. After escaping from the Maestro, the Doctor takes Ruby to her present, discovering the world in a nuclear winter, which, I mean, I don't know if losing music would do that, but I don't doubt that it wouldn't do that. The Maestro appears, revealing themselves as a child of the toy maker with similar powers, but around music instead of games. They take control of the TARDIS, forcing the Doctor to return to the studios in 1963. There, he and Ruby try to find the cord that would banish the Maestro, but the two are powerless. Meanwhile, John and Paul arrive to play the cord that traps the Maestro, who portends the coming of the one who waits to the Doctor. Music returns, and the Doctor and Ruby engage in a musical number, before leaving in the TARDIS. What did you make of episode 2?
All right. I have a complicated reaction to episode 2, so I'm going to try and be fair to it. Right. So Okay, Jinx Monsoon, let's just deal with that. So Jinx Monsoon was brought in to play an absurd member of the Pantheon in the form of Maestro, mm-hmm. and to be beyond ridiculous and like kind of Disney villain, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Almost like a sort of, yeah.
I was getting those vibes.
Yeah, and performs it to perfection. I cannot fault Jinx Monsoon's performance in this episode. And also, again, you know, again, watching some of the stuff behind the scenes, the sort of elements of that character that Jinx brought to it that wasn't necessarily on paper, you know, that's why you hire Jinx Monsoon to do that. And bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, so let's move on that a little bit. The whole issue with this episode for me is that it points in a direction that I hope we're not going to go down. So the plot idea that, you know, so we know one of the Pantheon already in the form of the Toy Maker, and so we get the gist of what these gods in inverted commas are like. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that Maestro would be like, you know, massive chaos energy, would be utterly twisted, but also kind of absurdly frivolous and camp and nuts. We know that when the Toy Maker was defeated, that some of his mojo was left, because that's how we ended up with the split TARDIS and what have you. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that when Maestro is defeated, that there is still some Maestro mojo kicking about, hence, and this is where the gritted teeth are, hence the musical number at the end of it, which,
yeah.
I'm just going to say, I hated.
Didn't like it, yeah.
I didn't like it. We know there's a twist at the end, and we know Susan Twist is in every episode. She was a tea lady in this one, in case you missed it. Mm-hmm. I didn't need it. I didn't also particularly enjoy the way in which visually Maestro's defeat was handled, the whole Carol of the Bells routine. So Russell likes having these sort of motifs that appear throughout whole seasons of Who, and I don't hate it. Like the Bad Wolf one, iconic.
Oh, yeah.
But that was a little bit more subtle. I mean, it wasn't subtle, but it was more subtle.
More
than
subtle
this.
Than this. Yeah.
Yeah. So the snow motif that we've got through all the episodes so far, okay, fine, we get it. And the Susan Twist thing, I'd like to see her present, but slightly less obviously, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There are problems with the way that, like, it feels, I'm going to be a bit cruel here. I'm going to say it feels very American. It's being really spelled out for people, like, oh, have you seen this? Look at this thing. Look at it. And it's like, I think you're patronizing your audience a bit. And that's not something that historically whoever did back in, like, particularly Classic Who. Classic Who assumed an awful lot of knowledge on behalf of its, on the part of its, you know, young viewers.
Yeah.
That, you know, and gradually it's become less and less over time, but this feels too far. In terms of the actual sort of this episode, like as in the, you know, the other aspects of it, I thought the guys playing the Beatles, Chris Mason was the only one I know.
It's from Riverdale,
The other actors were, yeah, from Riverdale. But I thought they were very good. I thought the nice little nod to Cilla Black was cute. Utterly unnecessary, but somehow brilliant. I thought the weird cameo from Shirley Ballas was weird. That was an odd moment. There was so much in there that was charming, that was, again, still very, very Russell T. Davies. But at the same time, like the music thing is going to boil my piss if that becomes a sort of endless feature of it. Where it slots into the sort of the greater arc and so on, and to continuity, obviously we can see where this is going. I mean, yes, there are secrets in here, obviously, but we know that Susan Twist is almost certainly either actual Susan from back in 1963, mm-hmm. or some relative of Susan, and hence the Doctor as well.
Yeah.
We're seeing references to family and, you know, particularly dad and grandfather creeping in all over the place. Lots of signposting is going on. And in this one, you know, the Doctor says to Ruby that in 1963 he was living in Shoreditch with his granddaughter and what have you. So we know where all this is going. And we also know from the other side of the arc, the big bad, we know it's the Pantheon. Now, the one who waits, I'm not sure who that is, because we've still got one more known member of the Pantheon before we get to the big mystery one. Mm-hmm. And that's Trickster, who, again, depending on whether you watch the spin-off aspects of Who, Trickster was a character in the Sarah Jane adventures.
Yeah.
And was... did have interaction with the Doctor in the form of David Tennant in that show,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very good idea for a character that wasn't really properly explored in that show, because that show didn't like to get too complicated, because it was ultimately aimed at a slightly younger audience,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. I would quite like to see some of the characters from that show perhaps even appear in this when we get the Trickster episode, which is, I mean, it's got to be coming, right? I assume what we're going to get is, so we've already had the toy maker, we've got Maestro. I presume we're going to get Trickster sometime relatively soon. I then think that the one who waits will be towards the end. And I think what we'll probably ultimately discover is that these, as the Doctor perceives them to be, potentially gods, it turns out, are some sort of decidedly regular being ultimately, very powerful, but ultimately they're not gods. They are simply an alien force, possibly part of some greater sort of alien empire or something. And I'm looking forward to all of that. I like where this is going, but I don't like some steps on the road. And mm-hmm. the musical bit, you know, I feel like we've had enough. We had the musical number in what was it called, Church on Ruby Road, the Spice Girls number. We had the goblins. We had
this.
You know, we've had this. Just put that particular toy down, please.
Yeah.
Russell. And Russell, you know, he will have a plan, and it's really telling that he's written almost every episode of the first.
Oh yeah,
first season. It seems so weird to call this the first
two
season.
Exceptions, I believe, only.
Yeah, and he's got Moffat in there to do. Well, no spoilers for people who haven't watched it, but Moffat brings a darker energy to Who. We know that,
mm-hmm.
and you probably wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened in episode three.
Yeah,
and then you've got the combination of Kate Herron and Bryony Redman, I think,
mm-hmm.
in the one called Rogue, I think.
Yes.
And now that's interesting, because Kate Herron is she's got two very interesting sort of bits that I know about her. So she writes comedy. Mm-hmm. She's somebody who does particularly sort of female-led comedy stuff.
Yeah.
But where she ties into Disney is on a different line altogether.
Mm-hmm.
She was the director and I think exec producer of Loki.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. And the fact that it's called Rogue, and I'm wondering whether, given that it's obviously off the arc, I assume, given, you know, the rest of the writers, I wonder whether this episode is... part of, I wonder if it might be a sort of superhero vibe thing. I think we're going to have a two-part arc in, like a sort of sub-arc, I guess, in episodes 4 and 5. I think we're going to have a totally separate universe or separate sort of aspects or spin-off area when we deal with Rogue. And then I think we're going to come back to that final double episode when we're going to deal with... the one who waits. But I do think 4 and 5 are probably going to be the Trickster kind of maybe double episode bit. So yeah, like there's a lot going on here, and you know, Shuti Gatwa is, if you haven't like embraced his doctor by the end of episode two, all I can say is by the end of episode three, you know, every doctor has that moment, I think.
Yeah.
By the end of episode three, in your mind, I guarantee you, by the end of that, you have no doubt Shuti Gatwa is the doctor. Like mm-hmm. it's that episode.
I can't wait.
Bam, got it. And I'm kind of hoping to see a little bit more from Ruby, because mm-hmm. at the moment, like she has some good moments in Space Babies, in fairness.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, in Devil's Court, I felt like she was doing kind of old Who. She was very much kind of running yeah. around and screaming a lot. It was yes. a kind of return to the days of Mel.
Yes.
You know, and I see her ultimately perhaps being maybe that kind of person until we discover the big secret and mm-hmm. the legend of Ruby Sunday, as the penultimate episode's called, of course. Yeah. But yeah. So
what would you give this one?
Devil's Chord does better than it deserves to in getting a four. And a lot of that okay. four comes from Jinx Monsoon. And
what a performance.
Yeah, and if I were being mean, I would say it was three because of how much that musical number at the end pissed me off.
Well, I'll make you feel better, Ben. I gave it a three.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm working my way up. I really liked the Jinx Monsoon performance. I thought was fantastic. Like way over the top, chewing scenery
glorious,
like crazy.
Wasn't
but
it?
Like, yeah, and I'm like, that is the point of a role like that. Like that's what you aim for. Yeah. So I thought that was fantastic.
And actually scary. I meant to mention that before.
In some ways, yes. Very menacing.
A character that absurd shouldn't like be able to be yeah. genuinely scary. And there were some moments in there because she's so unhinged.
Yes. You know?
But like she does have big like Disney animation
oh, yeah.
baddie vibes, which I loved.
She was practically animated in this episode in real life. It was pretty incredible to behold, honestly. You really aim for that sort of performance in a role like this and just hit it out of the park. I really liked the concepts behind mm-hmm. a lot of this. It just felt like it didn't quite land fully in execution. Like as the episode was going, like, okay, I was really feeling it. And then after a while it hit this point where I don't know what happened, but I was like, is this still going on? Like it feels like it's taken a while to wrap up here. And I don't know. I don't know if it overstayed its welcome. I don't know if I felt like they didn't have enough story to go the whole distance for me, but it sort of started really wearing out its welcome at the end. I mean, there is the like the nice touch at the end that it's like Lennon and McCartney essentially not on purpose, but like because they're Lennon and McCartney, you know, yeah. they're the ones that do it. I do find it weird that they're still making music, but bad music and on purpose. And I'm like, wait, what? Why would you even bother? Like if nobody cares about music anymore.
Such a bizarre concept.
It was such a weird concept that they're like, well, we make bad music.
I sort of loved it. Yeah. I sort of loved that they were kind of deliberately doing that. It was nuts, completely nonsensical. It was
bonkers.
Was somehow brilliant.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for an explanation and I never got one.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
it's like,
but I think I'd have been crosser if there was an explanation.
Yeah, it was so out of pocket. I don't know why it was doing. I mean, maybe they felt compelled to do things that would drive people further away from music. They maybe, just had this unknown drive. Like before in our timeline, they would feel this. They would feel compelled to make music, and they make the music that they make. But here, because of a world with like music is being sucked away, they feel compelled to make music that's bad. So I don't know. I'm trying to like retcon the idea here, but it was so weird.
Some
to
glorious
me.
Glorious nonsense. Yeah.
Absolutely nonsensical, but it was fun. Yeah, it just sort of it started out strong, and as it kept going, it just was running out of fuel. For me, and by the end, it was like, oh, we're running on E here, and then they do the musical, and I'm like, oh, what? Yeah. Another musical number? And it wasn't particularly great or memorable, and I ended up at a three at the end of the day. But I am looking forward, and that is a step up from episode one, but I am looking forward to episode three. You have hyped it up greatly. And
it's interesting. Just one thing I have noticed, and I think you probably know this before going into it, is that the audience reactions to the first three episodes is interesting.
Yeah.
Because in terms of viewer numbers and quite a lot of reviews, three, although every fan I've spoken to, and I've spoken to a lot of Whovians over the course of the last 48 hours, all the fans say three is easily the best episode of the first four, including the special, like by a mile. And everyone's slightly surprised that, oh shit, Moffat's hit it out of the park in Russell's return season. Oh dear, that's awkward.
Well, I mean, Moffat did write quite a few times during Russell's first run as well.
Yeah,
and
I think they're a great creative pairing.
I think they're a great pairing. And you could make the argument that Moffat is maybe better served in the role of writing than he is of running the show.
Definitely.
And that comes from somebody who did really like Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi as well.
Moffat's only real problem as a showrunner was that he unnecessarily sort of overcomplicated stuff and occasionally, like, there wasn't enough light and shade. It was all shade for a long time. But the interesting thing is that the difference between the audience response, which seems to have been spectacularly in favor of episode three compared to specials and one and two, is that it's so far it's the worst performing episode.
Three is?
And I mean, can't quite get my head around that.
You could argue that the first two episodes maybe push some people away.
That could
always be the case. But we'll see.
That's possible. We'll see. Yeah.
In the meantime, everybody, head on over to cinemageekly.com where you can check out the archives of the show, including the Christmas special and the David Tennant specials episodes as well, or the mini season of David Tennant's return. Ben and I covered all those episodes, so they are there waiting for you. Of course, it's a listener-supported podcast, and there are some ways you can help out there. We have Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have the merch store, Ben. Do you have the correct TARDIS switch?
GeeklyMerch.com.
That is horrifying.
Really is, isn't it?
It is really terrifying. And of course, you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and Pocket Cast. Just search for Who Made Who. And I almost forgot the name of the podcast that I...
Search for Doctor Who Podcasts. Featuring those two. You know the one.
The ones. The British guy and the American guy. You know the ones.
The one where only Sylvester McCoy will talk to them. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one. Just listen out for Sylvester McCoy, and that's the right one. Just search for Who Made Who. Hit subscribe, and that way you can join us next time, where we will continue to talk about Doctor Who Series 14, Episode 3, Boom, and Episode 4, 73 Yards.